It's the Brouhaha Podcast with Steve Jackson and Mark Carpenter.
It's now the Drive Hot Monk Brouhaha that we do on Thursdays. Today we're featuring Sonoma County Distillery Company on the first part of the Drive Brouhaha. Adam Spiegel is back with us. Dude.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Times, they are a-changing.
Tell us about the history of Sonoma County Distilling Company.
Sure. So I started distilling a little bit before 2010, but we launched in 2010. Originally as 1512 Spirits. Yes.
Yeah.
We started in a 700-square-foot distillery to begin, and then I quickly moved from 2010 to 2013 into a 6,000-square-foot facility. And now I'm excited to say we've now moved again. And after living in a 6,000-square-foot space for 5 years, to a new 12,000-square-foot distillery we've been working on for a year and a half.
12,000!
Plus a 9,000-square-foot barrel room, which we're breaking
down.
That's
almost as big as our studio.
I will take that. So it's cool. I mean, what's nice is that we've taken all these elements of whiskey making that I've been working on for 9 years and just try to make it better. And so I've got new equipment that I think is just not going to just make more whiskey, but make better whiskey.
So what's your history with the...
Well, I was a fallout of the 2008, financial crisis. I was working in financial sales. I was not the guy sort of pressing the buttons, but more the person trying to get money to come in.
Yeah.
And I lost my job with, 600 other people at a firm in one day. And
wow.
I came to a realization that I didn't, A, want to work for anybody else ever again. And B, I really wanted to learn how to make something. I wanted to learn how to create something by my hands, because I feel like so many people of my generation just don't know how to actually make something. So I said, I started making beer, I started making wine. Wine sort of turned into grappa, and then eventually that turned into whiskey.
I'm Italian. I love grappa. Well, I just can't,
I do too, especially if you make
every
it right.
Every 10 years, I'll drink some grappa, but that's about,
My wife has this running joke that if I've ever had a really good meal, I'll always have a grappa afterwards. That's how she knows I had a good meal, so I'll always order a grappa afterwards.
Explain what grappa is for non-Italian.
So non-Italian. So grappa is essentially you take pomace, so the leftover grapes, skins, stems, lizards, whatever you'd like. You rehydrate those grapes back up again, and then you distill that pomace again. It sort of gives those things an extra life. The reason that's so important is that I feel it really gives you sort of the soul of the wine before it's made. In traditional, especially when they want to get more yield, they'll throw sugar in there, which I don't love, because what that does is it gives you a very fossil fuel-y based spirit.
And a bad hangover.
And a really, really bad hangover. But for us, when I ever used to make it, we would just go ahead and rehydrate, use a very traditional style, push it down for about a week or two, and then distill it using a traditional still. And the flavors, I think, are just far more dynamic. You get roses, and you get peachsuckle, and you get all sorts of fun
peachsuckle.
Stuff. Peachsuckle. Honeysuckle and a peach all in one.
Yeah. And it's high in alcohol.
It can be, especially if you're going through a column still. I've always been a pot distiller, so we have our local affiliation with that too. But pot distillation for us.
Pointing at Mark Carpenter here.
Yes. So Mark and I were briefly discussing the need for more pot distilled whiskeys in this world, and frankly, I think that gives you the more full bodied whiskeys. It gives you more viscosity and esters and mouthfeel and all the stuff you get out of your fermentations. You get in your distillate, and that's what you're going for when you want a really nice premium spirit. So we've always used pot stills at Sonoma Distilling Company, and we'll continue to use them.
You know, Steve, the way you described making the grappa, that's the traditional way of making grappa. And up until recently, there weren't very many people doing that. We did that at Anchor because for a while we had all three licenses at the brewery. And so we had the pumice, and we'd bring it over to the distillery. And you don't get much grappa out of it that way.
No.
But what you get is fantastic. Most grappa makers these days are adding wine or just... pumice is only part of the mix in the still.
Explain pumice again.
Grapes, skins, twigs, pretty much everything you put into your press at the time of pressing, it's just leftover. So that's really why I think grappa is also a really great product. It's really sort of the peasant product. It's like what they got, and the rich people had their beautiful wines.
And that's how it started in Italy.
Of course. Yeah. And so that's why I love about it is it's such an expressive thing. It gives you a nice glimpse of what the wine can become because it's such a concentrated flavor profile of what you put in.
I didn't know.
It just started in
Anchor.
Yeah, we did
grappa.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. The and it was just economical for the small Italian producer that it, because if he threw away his pampas, he was throwing away some alcohol.
Right.
And so why not go ahead and get it?
I want to point out that so we have Mark Carpenter here, who was the head brewer for Anchor for 45 years, but you helped start the distilling program.
Correct.
With at
Fritz,
Anchor
and
with
Fritz McDermott, and Bruce Joseph.
Yeah, and I guess Adam knows a couple of them as well.
Yeah, Adam knows Bruce.
But when you're talking about you had a license at the time at Anchor to be do all three, that's like because after Prohibition, you couldn't have a distillery, a brewery, and a winery or whatever else.
No, you
all
could
in
have
one.
All three.
You could.
We had all three at Anchor. Yeah,
but
you wind up having to put them separate on a piece of paper. There was an imaginary line on the floor that this was the distillery and this was the brewery.
Right.
And this was the winery. So they were just separate. But, yeah, we had three licenses. The winery was actually across the street, but the two of them were in the same building.
Well, what I'm grateful for is that you guys paved the way for us, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you are among, 50 distilleries in the United States, 40 distilleries in the United States at that time. I was within the first 200 back in 2010. Now there's 1,800 distilleries
it's
in the United States.
It's just like breweries.
This whole
and here in Sonoma County.
Sonoma County, there's about 25.
Which is huge
for our area. Exactly, yeah. Yeah. It's huge for our area, too, because we have so much tourism. We have so many people who come here. They want something that's sort of reminiscent of the place that they visited. Now they've got Sonoma whiskey to bring home, put in their carry-on or what have you, bring home and share with friends and family.
And where, explain again where you guys are located and how people can get to your...
We're in Rohnert Park, California.
I've heard of it.
Right there on State Farm Drive. We have a facility that's going to relaunch its tasting room come June. So right at the beginning of summer, we'll be able to let people come back in again, do tastings and tours by appointment. And, we've always been in Rohnert Park, so it's been a good town for us. We started there. We'll ideally stay there for...
Adam, I'm drinking some of your rye whiskey here. And if you could tell us about it, with the ingredients, what kind of barrels you use. I think it's a delicious whiskey.
Thanks.
It's got some great, I'm drinking it full strength, and it's got some great stone fruit flavors to it and some smoke and nice barrel flavor. But anyway, go ahead. Tell us.
Sure. Yeah, so the Sonoma rye whiskey that you're drinking today is really our flagship. Between that, Sonoma rye and our Sonoma bourbon, really sort of the two things that built the house. Sonoma rye is 100% rye, so it's 80% unmalted rye, 20% rye malt.
What is the advantage or the difference when using rye versus like
rye
corn and other things like that that we would do? Because in Kentucky, you can only call it Kentucky bourbon if it has a percentage of
51% corn minimum to be called a Kentucky bourbon. Of course, as we made in Kentucky, but you can make bourbon anywhere in the United States as long as it's 51%
rye
corn.
Is the same thing as bourbon?
They're all in the same family. It's a really good question. So whiskey is the category. The subcategory is rye whiskey, bourbon, single malt. And so whatever the mash bill is, whatever the grains are that you use, the combination of those things is what creates what it is. So a rye whiskey has to be a minimum of 51% rye, but then it can be corn or barley, what have you. Ours is incredibly unique. It's 100% rye. Bourbon is 51% corn, made in America, goes into a new and charred American oak. You've got wheat whiskey, which can be 51% wheat, whatever the majority of the grain is that's in that mash bill is what sort of gives it its flavor.
So I'm drinking the cherry rye
The Cherrywood rye right now,
and
correct.
It's very smooth. It's really nice.
Rye whiskey is really the traditional American whiskey. It was some of the first American whiskeys because barley in colonial times it didn't do all that well in the colonies, and the brewers needed it. The distillers could get along with rye, so they used it.
Right.
But one of the problems with rye, when you ferment it, it's almost impossible to separate the grain from the liquid. But with a distillery, you're distilling the whole grain and everything.
Right.
And so that became American tradition to distill all of the grain. Scotch whiskey, they actually make it like beer, separate it from the grain, then distill it. But here in America, we're distilling it with the grain, and I believe that's what Adam's doing with this.
Yeah, exactly. The cool part also was that for the first 8 years of our existence, we used direct-fired stills. So I actually had a 400,000 BTU burner underneath my still, heating my still up. So if you taste a little bit of caramelization in there, that's actually from the direct-fired stills. Our new facility actually utilizes steam, but in contrast, I can actually distill on the grain. To your point, don't have to separate them, leave them in there, let the soul of the grain really pop out. So I'm excited to be able to take sort of the techniques I've done before and sort of make it bigger.
And I would love to taste some of this, but we just tasted some wine, and
your head will hurt all day.
Yes, I got to be cool. So, but
yeah,
so how many different whiskeys are you making?
So predominantly, we are a Sonoma Rye and Sonoma Bourbon House. Seasonally, we'll release our Cherrywood Rye and our Cherrywood Smoked Bourbon, both of which actually incorporate a Cherrywood Smoked barley, which we actually smoke ourselves. So we have a 40-foot shipping container that we've converted into a smoker. So think of, like, barbecue. You know, our goal is not to actually burn the grains, but really just impart that Cherrywood smoke into there. And by using California cherry trees, you get a little bit of that sort of local terroir, too. You get a little bit of what goes on around the trees affect the flavors.
I'm smoking.
Yeah.
I would like
that.
To smoke
that's
it.
2 weeks from now.
I'm
sorry.
Smelling cherry wood smoked barley. I would love to put this on a steak.
Yeah, I mean, I would recommend actually pairing the drink with the steak. So a cherry wood smoked bourbon would do incredibly well with a charred steak.
That is really good. Can
bourbon
I take this?
Sauce.
Oh, absolutely. I've made it into
sauce.
Reduction sauces all day long. That's been fun for me.
Something really cool also about Adam, another reason why I had invited him on, too, is he was just on the cover of Whiskey International magazine. You've been, going to, London and all kinds of places. They love our Sonoma, whiskey that you're making.
Yeah, we're incredibly fortunate and lucky. I think a lot of it has to do with my team. I mean, without literally the people behind me who do everything when I'm on radio shows like this or traveling to London, I would literally not exist. So without them, I'm really nothing. But the other part of that is I think we all sort of have this shared ethos of making good whiskey and not compromising our standards. And so we just kind of continue to perpetuate this whole thing. So the new pot stills that we've installed, those are a choice. We didn't have to do it.
Okay, what's the difference between pot stilling and
columns,
which look really cool, though. I like those, too.
So fundamentally, we're kind of talking about the difference between pre-industrial and post-industrial style stills. So you're talking about efficiency versus not so efficient. So column stills are really good at a single pass, distilling a product over and over and over again to give you high alcohol. So you get, vodkas and gins and some rums and whiskeys to a certain extent come out of column stills very, very alcoholic, very, very productive. You're able to redistill things until it's able to be drank.
And you can keep adding more of your fermented product into it as you distill.
Absolutely. So it's very efficient in that way. That's the number one thing, is that you can do things with less manpower, and it cleans itself. It's a very efficient process.
Pot stills are, go ahead.
Please. I mean, pot stills are just the biggest pain in the butt of all time, but they produce, if you think of scotches from Scotland, they produce highly viscous, super ester-driven, really, really full-bodied whiskeys. And so I think that's what really points us in a different direction than 99.9% of the distilleries in the whole United States, let alone California, is that we sort of adhere to this pot-distilled ethos, which says, if you make it through a pot-distill, it's going to make bigger whiskeys, better whiskeys.
And then when do you put it in the barrel, and how long does it go into the barrel for just to even, to start?
We use NewChar American Oak. We put into a barrel. Our minimum aging right now is generally between 2 and 4 years at a minimum. We do use some 30-gallon barrels, which allow for slightly rapid aging. But by comparison to our old days, when I first started, I used to use 3-gallon barrels, became 5-gallon barrels, became 15-gallon barrels. I didn't want to make gin or vodka, so the only way I could produce a product that was ready to be drank was it had to go in a smaller barrel. Very expensive by contrast.
Your thoughts, because I didn't know that Anchor, back in the day, distilled stuff.
Yes, we made some, we still do, make some great whiskey and gin. But now, Adam says he just ages for 3 or 4 years, and very often people will say, well, gee, that's not like not a very good whiskey. Scotland's 15 years, 18 years, but what's more important is he's using new oak charred barrels. And it's like, and the Scotch are always using older, once used barrels. So it's all, they're, what, the way they do it, it's like making a cup of tea out of a tea bag that's already made a previous cup of tea. Huh. It's going to have to soak there for much, much longer before you get the flavors.
That's a good analogy. I'm going to steal that.
So,
he's
yeah.
a man. He's a master.
Stolen.
No problem.
So, using these new charred barrels, it comes to life much quicker and turns into a very good whiskey.
And we also have the standard 53-gallon barrels.
Yeah.
We just let them sit longer. I worked with Hubert Germain Rabonne, who's a local cognac style maker here in Mendocino County. He taught me a lot about how to make whiskeys in a very cognac style way, so not to over oak our spirits, you know, to really blend the oak tannins and the spice, the grains to marry well together. I'm pretty excited about that.
What are those little eyedropper things that you have?
I brought them in just if you want to add some drops of water to your whiskey, you know, it's a way to open it up. When you talk about pot distilled whiskeys, they are very, very thick spirits. So if you drink it neat, you put an ice cube in it, or you put some drops of water,
I poured a little bit of my glass in there before I saw the eyedroppers.
Because the adding the water will change it, as Adam says, it'll open it up. And I think one of the best ways to drink a whiskey is to just put in an ice cube, because then it's adding water as you drink it. Mm-hmm. And so then you can taste the changes. Sometimes if you let a drink sit around, you kind of forget about it, and then all of a sudden you go to it with a lot of water in, and you get surprised how good it is. So don't hesitate to add a little water.
Well, it's your drink, too. My assumption is you bought a bottle, it's yours. You know, ours are on the shelf between $40 and $50 a bottle. You know, that's your bottle. You want to put ice in it. I've had some people be like, I like to mix your cherry wood rye with Coca-Cola. I'm like, fine, you just made a cherry soda. I don't care. You can do whatever you want.
Or that cherry is less
than
that probably tastes pretty good.
Yeah, it's a cherry Coke.
Yeah.
When we first started selling our whiskey, we sold it at 125 proof. Because we were trying to make a traditional American whiskey, and that's the way they would have sold it.
Absolutely.
They would have sold it at barrel strength.
More
they never meant you to drink it at barrel strength, but that's the way they sold it to you. But we actually lowered the alcohol because we couldn't convince bartenders and whatnot that they had to alter their recipes to get it down to 90 proof or whatever is the best drinking proof.
That would make a good old-fashioned that way.
These, by the way, I saw were 95 proof, this rye.
Yeah, this one's at 93. Our other one's at 92, so 46 and 46.5% ABV.
Yeah.
We always leave the ABVs high. I think you get more quality and value for that, and you can have more versatility.
Exactly. And then, as you said, you can add water, add anything, and cut it to your preference.
So if you're looking at proof, and you want to, correlated to ABV for all like our beer drinkers out there, they're used to looking at ABV. So is it like basically cutting the proof in half and
yes.
that makes the ABV? Okay.
Yeah, all you're talking about is
I just did math for you all.
And again, we're just talking about the addition of water. So ultimately, a whiskey that's at 40% alcohol or 46% alcohol, it's really just the addition of water that brings it down. And so I ultimately think you get a little bit more alcohol for your buck there. And I think all you're trying to do is find the right balance, the balance of alcohol and water and flavor.
Because most whiskey makers, they age at the same proof. I assume you go in about 125?
No, we go a little lower just because we sort of found it to be a sort of nice middle ground. We're between 114 and 116.
Very good.
All right. Well, like I said, I wish I could taste this stuff. I may have to take some home.
It's yours.
Thank you, sir. Because we have the Pink Boots Society coming in. We're going to talk about some beer. Herlinda, when are you gallivanting again?
I'm going to go see my daughter in New York for Easter because she's out there on her own for the last 3 years. Pretty proud of her. She loves whiskey. Oh, my God. And then I'm going to go from there to Portugal to judge the Iberian Awards again. Which is fantastic. Newly emerging beer market, like newly emerging spirits market as well. They've been doing, of course, port and wine for a long time. So you would love Portugal, Steve.
I know. Adam Spiegel, thank you so much, man.
Thank you.
Great job. Sonoma County Distilling Company. And Mark Carpenter is sticking around.
I'll be here.
Yeah.
You're going to have some beer now.
All right.
That's why I'm here.
Yeah.
The whiskey's just gravy on top.
Part two of the Drive Hop Monk Brouhaha. Now we've got a couple ladies from the Pink Boots Society from Sonoma County, Napa County, or are you guys from Sonoma County?
Napa, and it's including Sonoma.
And this is nationwide, right?
Yeah, it's actually international.
Yeah.
So.
International.
Yeah, the Pink Boots Society is an international organization for women that some part of their income is coming from beer. So you can be a bartender, you can be on the radio, you can, you know, be a brewer, and it's just super duper fun. And I know Mark's always been a big supporter of women.
Although I've never seen him wearing pink boots, but that's okay.
No, I haven't.
Give me your thought.
It's great because, you know, when I started, there was we had a couple of women in Anchor, but it seemed like they always wanted to get out of the brew house and into the office work. So I think it's great that there's women that are staying in the breweries and actually making products. As Adam said, there's a lot to be said for actually making something that people enjoy, and it's nice to see so many women that are there making these great products now.
All right,
I'm drinking one of their beers. They made this collaboration. They can hopefully tell us about it. But it's a delicious beer, so it's a wonderful floral hoppy aroma. So I hope they'll tell us about it.
And they will.
Favorite, I think.
Introduce our guest, Herlinda, quickly.
So we've got Sarah Gibbons. She works over at the new Stone Brewery restaurant and tap room in Napa, right downtown, which is fabulous, in the old Stone building there downtown. And then we've got Reed, that works at Grab South Brewery in Cotati. And we had one day where, I can't remember the exact date, but everybody came together, like all over the world. Women came together at different breweries, and like whether they were a brewer or not, and made a beer. And it was with this one Yakima hops that what's the name of the company again that does it? The Yakima Hop Company?
Yeah, it's Yakima Chief.
Yeah.
And every year we do a collaboration hop blend with them. So. Thank you. So we use this hop blend. You don't have to use the hop blend to participate in the brew day, but we do use it. And it was used in the beer that we're drinking right now, which is Kick Your Brutes Up. And that's the one that we brewed at Grav South. And I think it's delicious. I think it turned out really well.
All right. Give us the history and the whole situation, because you said this is worldwide, the Pink Boots Society.
I can probably do that.
I'd rather have them
do it.
All
right. So Pink Boots started in, it's international, but it started in America. And we kind of saw this need for women to have more of a community in the beer industry. And so we created it for ourselves. So the president currently is Laura Ulrich, and she is a brewer in Escondido at Stone Brewing. So Stone's been very, very involved in Pink Boots. And then our local chapter, it's Napa Valley, but we do Napa County and Sonoma County. And that is about 6 or 7 months now, so we're still pretty new.
Yeah. So the lady that started Pink Boots is Terry Farrendorf. She started with Laura Ulrich. And Terry works at Great Western Malting, but she was one of the few women brewers. And
she was,
her for years,
well, Terry
right,
was just, she was alone in the brewing world,
yeah.
You know, so it's.
And she started she was in the East Bay. She was like in Berkeley. And,
correct. Well, then she moved around quite a bit.
Right.
But she did a great job. She was good. She was always a lot of fun. Yeah, she was, and as I said, she was alone in the brewing world, and then slowly there's been more and more women getting involved, and now I'm sure there's hundreds if not thousands in the U.S.
One of the big things we talk about, too, is like misogyny and gender and, you know, like labels that put down, or they don't think they're putting down women, but you know, we look at, you know, we call those out, like if labels are inappropriate or names are inappropriate towards women. And it's been really great for other women to have a forum to be able to talk about sexual harassment and all kinds of other things as well. But
brewers would never be like that. I hope my daughter's listening. She'll like that.
No, you guys are cool. Okay, this collaboration situation, what does that all mean? You're collaborating with what, Sonoma and Napa County?
It was a collaboration with the brewery I work for, so that's Grab South in Cotati.
In Cotati.
And, I wasn't actually there for the brewing, but I believe like a handful of people from the Pink Boots Society and a couple of our employees came in on a Friday morning, and they our head brewer, Greg, walked them through how to brew this beer, and they basically did all the hard work, and he just kind of told them what to do.
But, yeah, there was about 12 women there that day that put that together. Then you were down there, too, that day, weren't you?
I was, yeah. I was one of the ones that Greg was bossing around. Yeah. So it was a lot of fun.
This is a killer beer, though.
It is. Tell us about what are the hops in there?
Ooh, so one of them is an experimental hop, which they just recently named the Lotus.
Uh-huh.
So we just had the number, and then I believe it's a Mosaic hop. And then, so it's a brew IPA, which is a new type of beer that's come about the past couple months that actually started in San Francisco at Social Kitchen, so we kind of did our own version. So during, right after fermentation, he adds this enzyme that people have not been putting in IPAs, and it really dries it out instead of giving it the bitterness. And
Mark,
yeah.
We had Kim. Get more into your thoughts on that.
Well, it's a great brewed IPA, and as you remember, we had Kim Studiment, the guy who invented brewed IPA.
Yeah.
Here on the show with us, and at that time, he told us it was actually a woman, his girlfriend, who gave it the name Brut IPA.
Right.
That he was making a beer that it was champagne-like. And,
yeah, and I said, is this champagne and beer? And he explained the whole thing.
Yes.
It was fascinating.
It was, and then he kept trying to come up with a name in his own mind, and it was his girlfriend who actually came up with the name Brut IPA.
Now, are they doing champagne yeast as well, too, or just the enzyme?
I think Kim is using a champagne yeast.
That's what
in
I thought,
some of
yeah.
his. Maybe, I can't remember about all, but I think the main thing is that they're using the enzyme that converts all the starches to sugars, so it becomes a very dry beer.
Let's hear a little bit about the breweries that you guys are at right now, too, and Stone is super new. It's right, you know, where the Oxbow Market is, right there. You can actually walk there. You can sit outside on Napa River.
Yes.
It's Sonoma County, yeah.
Get your rivers straight, my dear.
Beautiful old stone building.
Oh, God, it's amazing. There's an elevator there. It's a great restaurant and great food. And then you're bartending over there right now, right?
Yes, I am. I bartend over there along with the co-leader for our Pink Boots Society chapter, Cynthia Cisneros. Hi, if you're listening.
Hi, Cynthia.
So I bartend over there, and it's an absolutely wonderful building, like you said. It's actually the second oldest building in Napa. So we've put a lot of love into restoring it and keeping it. Yes. Yes.
And because it's made of stone.
Yes. And since it's considered a historical building, we do a lot to keep the facade looking the same and to keep the integrity of the building maybe the same.
Yeah.
So we really, really love where we are. We have phenomenal brewers that are brewing Napa-specific beer. So you can go there and get stone beer that you can't get really anywhere else right now.
But you're also, so then they have the big brewery down in Escondido near San Diego. So they're doing those beers as well. But they also have a lot of these like barrel-aged beers with the Chocovessa, which I love. It's like a chocolate and a little bit of chili beer.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really good. And then you're over at Grab South right here in Cattati.
Yeah.
So we got a little Napa Sonoma. I love that.
Yeah. I love Cattati.
Yeah.
Used to live there for a long time.
You played a lot of music there, too.
So where is the brewery?
It's actually really hard to find. Our location is not prime, but the Lowe's in Cattati, we're right across the street from that in that shopping complex.
Okay.
If you park in front, you'll see, like, the dispensary, and then on the far right, there'll be, like, a giant red mural, and then you just follow that right in through our doors.
It's where Montana Hawk used to be, and, like, there's a good-to-go military supply.
Oh, yeah.
It's right next to that.
So it's, like, coming into Roner Park, Cattati.
Yeah.
Like you're going to Gravenstein Highway, you turn right instead of going left into downtown, and then you just whip around right in there. But it's probably great for the Sonoma State University students. It's so close, too,
well,
right?
Well, yeah, it's really... So I go to
Sonoma
State.
You're doing barbecue and everything as well.
Yeah, so I go to Sonoma State right now, and actually to the student... Yeah, I know. It's just the location. It's pretty hard to find, so we're right back behind a bunch of, like, redwood trees. But once people find us, they keep coming back, and a lot of the times it's, like, our barbecue outside and our smoker that like people come wandering over and they're like, oh, what's that smell? And then they'll find us.
The food's really good. So they're actually not, so they're brewing beer there, but they're also serving other people's other places' yes. beers, other breweries' beers. You can, and it changes.
Yeah, like, we try to keep like a local-ish guest taps. Right now, we have a lot of. I think it's North Coast Brewing. We've had Cooperage. We've had a bunch of other breweries in our.
Tell us about the beers that you make there.
So right now, we usually keep 6 of our own beers up to 10 on tap. Right now, we have 4 IPAs. Our porter, which we're really well known for, we just tapped a French vanilla porter yesterday.
Oh, and that one at Battle of the Brews, the porter did.
The porter did? Okay, yeah. I wasn't there.
I was there till like for a long time.
Yeah, we also. Yeah, I heard it was fun.
I was gonna stop by and leave it as that.
Yeah, our most popular IPA is our 7-figure IPA. It's my favorite, personally. We usually have a double IPA on tap, our blonde, a Cotati Pale Ale, a porter.
Right, and Greg that's doing, he's your head brewer, he's actually a fireman as well.
Yeah.
So, like, he started this brewery, just like kind of like how St. Florian started, and then the fires were happening, and they're out fighting fires and trying to brew beer, and it was a crazy couple of years.
Yeah, and then our other owner, Corinne, used to be, I think, a fire marshal, so they, like, met through... So we get, like, so every Wednesday we do public safety appreciation, so, like, police, military vets, firefighters, we give them paramedics, like, discounts and stuff, so that's nice, too.
Yeah, are you guys doing a college night as well, too, at all?
We are working on, like, student Sundays or something like
that.
Okay,
something calm.
Yeah, it's not crazy.
I want to thank her, Linda, and Mark Carpenter, as always. We'll see them both next Thursday on the Drive Up Monk Brouhaha. And our great friends from the Pink Boots Society.
Yeah, we'll have the Waldos that started the whole 420 thing next week. And I'd like to do a toast with our Pink Boots beer.
Get quick.
Dr. Katie Bowman, who found the black hole, PhD.
Ladies, great to meet everybody.